back, everybody, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, as ever, Tony Black. And this episode, we are going into a perhaps near-death experience as we are talking about the 15th episode of Season 1, Lazarus. But before we get there, let me introduce my guest. Once again, back on the X-Cast, it's Andrew Brooker.
Hello, mate.
How are you, mate? You all right?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me on again.
It's my pleasure. You're popping up at various... In fact, I think you've probably recorded more X-Cast episodes than anybody else with me. So, you know...
Yeah, I think I've recorded more X-Cast episodes than any other podcast I'm on.
Well, you're in for the journey now. I think that's
I am.
It now.
I'm stuck.
You're stuck. There's no escape. Moving on then, we're gonna get into the main meat of the episode. And as I said, we're going to talk about Lazarus. Lazarus is the 15th episode of the first season of The X-Files. It first aired on February 4th, 1994, and was written by Alex Ganza and Howard Gordon in their fourth, I believe, partnership of the season. It was also directed by David Nutter. The story sees a fellow agent and friend of Scully's, Jack Willis, shot by a criminal. And when Jack Willis is revived, Mulder suspects that he is not who he appears to be.
Any word from Willis?
Still missing. He hasn't been home or checked in with the office. I heard something on the way down about a mutilation.
Yeah. Three fingers under Prey's left hand were severed by surgical shears. We lifted prints. They're Willis's.
He said he was chasing this guy for almost a year?
Yeah, he lived the case. It was all he ever thought about, talked about.
What are you thinking?
That maybe this is some kind of post-trauma psychosis. Like the way soldiers sometimes mutilate the body of a dead enemy.
That still doesn't explain why he would just vanish. Dupre's partner. Who was she?
Lula Phillips.
They met while she was serving a 10-year sentence for manslaughter at the Women's Correctional Facility in Maryland.
He was a prison guard.
Until the warden found out about their secret. According to Lula's cellmate, they carried on quite a torrid romance.
Says here she was released on May 2nd, 1993.
1 week before the first robbery at Annapolis Savings and Loan. A 65-year-old female teller was pistol-whipped, died from a massive subdural hemorrhage, all because she didn't put the money in the bag fast enough.
Lovely couple.
Well, apparently they took turns. One pulling a job while the other one drove getaway. Between the two of them, they've killed 7 people and gotten away with close to $100,000.
That's a lot of money now that she doesn't have to split it two ways.
Well, we're putting her face out there. Local newspapers, America's Most Wanted. Am I boring you?
They were married.
Yeah, last May in Atlantic City. So what?
So I don't think this was a simple necrophiliac mutilation. Willis sliced and diced those fingers to get at the wedding ring.
Lazarus, then, Andrew, out of 10, where would you put it?
I wanted to give it a really low score because I was a bit bored watching it. But then I watched another episode and actually thought it's not that bad. So I would probably go with probably 6, 6.5 out of 10. It was all right.
Yeah, do you reckon it's a fairly middling, mid-tier episode?
Yeah, it's kind of... It's a very throwaway episode, I think. It's one you could easily skip if you were doing your binge. It's all right.
Yeah.
There are definitely worse, but there are much, much better.
Well, it's funny because I always remember not being a massive fan of Lazarus. And I always went through the first season thinking, oh, it's a bit dull and a bit dragging. And when I rewatched it recently, for the first time in quite a while, I was surprised to find that I felt it worked better than I remember. And I think that it's actually got a yard of pace to it that I didn't remember it having before. And, you know, there are certain things about it I still don't like particularly. Like, I'm not always 100% convinced by the guy in it, the guy who plays Jack Willis. I think the plot, it sometimes goes around in circles. And there's one crucial factor to this that they didn't do, which would have made it a far more interesting episode, which I'll get to in a minute. But I think overall, it surprised me, actually. And I think I would give it a 6.5 shade and a 7, actually. And originally, I thought this was going to be a solid 4.55 episode, because that's what I'd always remembered it being. Yeah, it pleasantly surprised me a little bit more.
I think I always got this one confused with the with the one with the talking tattoo.
Like that, funnily enough, that came, never again in season four. That that came up in my head with the tattoo stuff later on in the episode. That I did think of that one. There is a similarity, isn't there?
Yeah, I always got them confused, and I think this is why I maybe thought of it a bit higher than I did before, because that one is actually a very good episode.
Yeah, it is better.
I mean, this one is not bad. It's, you know, you quite nicely you get a little bit of extra Scully backstory in this one, which is quite nice. But as episodes go, I think the pacing is all right, but it leaves a little bit to be desired around the middle point when nothing really is explained yet. Everything keeps happening.
Yeah, that's true. Well, there's some interesting facts about this. In that, when I said a minute ago that there was one thing that I think they didn't do that they missed an opportunity with, was that originally Dupre was going to inhabit Mulder. Now, I think when I was watching it, I kept thinking, why is he in a random FBI agent we've never seen before, and why didn't they do this to Mulder? I mean, obviously, later on, we did get the body swap, you know, the soul swap, body swap episode in season six, Dreamland. But that was very comedic. Yeah. That wasn't, tonally, that was very different. Yeah. That was play for laughs. But in this, I think having Mulder be in Dupre's body and having David Duchovny getting to play a very different character would, I think, have been fabulous to watch, actually.
Yeah, it could have been interesting, I think. And the problem is because they don't seem like they know how they're going to end the episode.
Yeah.
With this episode. It just kind of has to stop where it does. And I don't know how you would get them back or get Mulder back in his own body at the end of this one, because you can't kill him off.
Well, I think that's possibly why when they originally planned for this, it provoked a negative reaction from Fox. And as it says, there was a train of thought that at the time, Scully nor Mulder should directly experience such phenomena as what they called a soul switch, as Howard Gordon phrased it. He said that the network balked at the idea of Mulder experiencing directly, firsthand, a supernatural event like that. And they didn't like the idea of using Mulder in such a way. And then, reluctantly, the producers agreed to the shift, although Howard Gordon said, we were angry and up in arms. And I think the point is, I agree with you. When I was watching it, I was thinking, dramatically, this would be better if Mulder was Jack. But how do they get him out of it? Because it would have been a very contrived thing to suggest, oh, he's fine. So yeah. His whole soul has just been switched with another guy, and oh, he's fine. So I do think it would have been harder to end. But I think equally, if they'd have figured out a way to do it that wasn't ridiculous, it could have been really, really exciting episode.
Yeah, I think that's the important bit, though, isn't it? Like in Dreamland, the original swap and the swap back, they're ridiculous at both ends of the episode. You know, and like you say, it's played for laughs. Well, if you're going to have a really serious episode about it, you can't have... there's no serious way to put them back. And yeah. I don't think it would have flowed quite so well.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. I think they had to do it in the way they did it, really, ultimately. Although it would have been interesting if they, you know, the studio were the ones who presumably had the more common sense here and changed it. It would have been interesting if they'd have got their way to see exactly what Howard Gordon and those guys would have wanted to do, really. But it's a big interesting fact, I think, with this episode. And like you say, Scully gets a little bit more background and a little bit more character, which we'll talk about later, which I thought was good because she doesn't always get that in season one. There's only it's at this point, we're past the point of Beyond the Sea, which is the first big Scully shine a light episode. And they're at the point now where they're getting a bit more comfortable with who she is, I think, to be able to explore her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's all good stuff. So, yeah, let's get into the episode in a bit more detail. As we're in the teaser, it starts obviously with Scully, and that's an unusual thing, isn't it? We don't normally see Mulder or Scully in the pre-credit sequence, do we?
No, and more importantly, it's Scully and not Mulder. Mulder's nowhere to be seen. You know, they're not on a partnership thing. She just happens to be off with another department, you know, been seconded for a couple of hours.
Well, you know, that made me wonder, actually, because I don't know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember in the episode there being any explanation as to why she was working with Jack.
No, it's not mentioned at all, as far as I remember, and I've watched it a couple of times in the last few days. I don't think it's mentioned or explained at all, which is pretty poor storytelling, to be fair. We, you know, we wouldn't accept that nowadays, I don't
think. No, you wouldn't, would you? Because, you know, she's assigned to the X-Files. Her partner is Mulder. And if it doesn't work that if an old mate of yours calls you up and goes, I'm having a bank raid, there's a couple of crims, come and help me, will you? That's not how it works.
No. Just a favour, just come stand around for a bit and look like you're doing your banking for a while.
So, yeah, that's a little bit flimsy in order to get her with Jack and for us to meet Jack and immediately tee up this pre-existing relationship she has with him.
I think this goes back possibly to the it was meant to be Mulder originally.
Well, yeah, maybe that yeah, and they're both on some kind of case that is linked to possibly. I think though it's well paced. I mean, as a teaser, there's a good sense of urgency with this, you know, and you're introduced to Dupre and Lula, who are the two criminals with their tattoo, and it's I think that I got an immediate sort of Bonnie and Clyde vibe from these two.
Yeah, I think that was supposed to kind of be the point, wasn't it? Somewhere between Bonnie and Clyde and the Nutters from Natural Born Killers.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Or with maybe a little bit of Honey Bunny and, what's his name, from Pulp Fiction. Tim Roth's character. What's his name? Pumpkin.
Pumpkin, yeah.
So, yeah. It's, you know, you get the point of those, and then you get, obviously, the tattoo as the visual cue. And then, you know, you get a raid. You know, there's a lot going on. You know, the Dupre breaks into the bank. I just thought the only thing with this that didn't work for me was the slow motion. And they do this in the X-Files towards the beginning. When you get action sequences, you do get like some really dodgy slow motion stuff going on where they slow things down. And
I don't either. I think it's possibly because the X-Files isn't really an action show. I don't think the editors quite know how to deal with actual action. It's the only explanation I could come up with for it. That and the fact that when Scully shoots him, she's quite clearly not aiming at him.
Yeah. She does a little bit of a like a twitch as well, doesn't she, Gillian Anderson? Yeah. I don't know whether that was like her firing the blank or whatever it was and just getting a bit scared.
Get a bit nervous as it goes off.
Yeah. She tries to hold it together, but there's a little bit of a shit. You can imagine when the camera's cut, she was like, fucking hell, that was loud. Yeah. But apparently David Nutter said in directing that he wanted to keep the episode filled with action, which accounts for the fact that there was a lot going on. He said the important thing there was to be as intense as possible and keep the pace going. I felt it was important really to make it as in your face as possible so any loopholes would be missed, which is an interesting
Fair
way
enough. I like the idea we're going to go so fast that you're not going to see our screw up.
Yeah, you're not going to question the things that don't make sense. Don't worry about it, right? It's fine. So that's a bit of a crafty way to get out of certain things, really.
So maybe we shouldn't slow things down if that's what they want to do then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think then obviously, you know, you get the sequence where Jack is being defibrillated and you've got the dead body of Dupre, or the seemingly dead body, Dupre, lurching up behind, you know, which I think is quite an unnerving, you know, visual. But I did think at the time, how has nobody noticed?
Somebody would have heard him hitting the deck.
You'd think so, yeah. Because that ER was full of people, wasn't it? Did nobody in the corner of their eye go, what the fuck was that?
I saw something moving in the corner of my eye. What was that?
Don't worry, it's just Dupre.
He's all right. We're finished with him. Just let him do his thing.
It's all right. Electrical spasms when the body's dead. Fuck off. It's Jesus Christ. He got a lightning rod up his ass. It was a bit silly. I did think, why is nobody clocking that? But yeah, you get the point. You get the point ultimately.
I mean, that whole scene, I think there's a bit of a problem with it. I don't find it tense at all. It's clearly supposed to be a really tense scene with them trying to resuscitate the agent, but it completely fell flat. Both times I was watching, I was like, I really don't care if this guy comes back or not. Again, I think I probably would have been a bit more invested if it had been Mulder they were doing it to.
Right.
But yeah, with Willis, I don't know. I don't care.
But this is it. You've got no. There's no like. He's never been mentioned before. And this is something that, I mean, in the following episode, Young at Heart, there's a problem with the fact that there's seemingly some massive things that affect the main character, but they've never been mentioned before. There's no context for them, and you kind of think that nothing leading up to this point has informed what they've done or who they are, and then it's just been thrown in. And it's more a problem in Young at Heart, but you do get a feeling with Jack Willis that because they had to create someone on the fly when they knew they couldn't do this with Mulder, they've created somebody who obviously Scully cares about, but we never knew about him. So why should we care about him?
No, I think you're right. We just, you know, we have no emotional connection with this guy whatsoever and just couldn't care less about what happens to him, which is pretty bad for a guy that turns out to be one of your main characters in the episode.
Yeah, because as soon as we get out the teaser, we're with him straight away, really, aren't we? When we're getting the immediate scenes where we're establishing that he's clearly not Jack Willis anymore, that something's different in the way he's acting and, you know, tightening a piece of rope potentially to use on people. So, you immediately know, oh, okay, he's not Jack Willis anymore. So we're supposed to be with him immediately. And like you said, he plays a very big part in this episode. You know, he's effectively a main character. It's one of those episodes where the guest star is the main character, really.
Yeah, and it's just, again, it's just someone you couldn't care less about.
Mm. Yeah.
First time I was going, okay, literally shrugging my shoulders at the TV going,
yeah, but they do immediately make him the narrative, don't they, in the terms of finding him. He disappears from the hospital after being revived, and it now becomes a mission to find him, doesn't it? So this is where Mulder comes into the story, where Scully's got him in because obviously he's disappeared, and we get we get a lot of exposition now, don't we? We get a lot of the explaining who he is, who Dupre and Lula are, things like that.
So we get the entire the character backgrounds for everybody in the show. Now they're being explained to us at the same time they've been explained to Mulder, which I think it works all right. I've got no issues with being told backstory like that. It's, you know, it's a pretty common way of doing it.
I thought the backstory with Lula and Dupre was interesting. I thought that was an interesting little bit of history there, in that she was in prison, he met her in there. And he had a professional job, and then they kind of went off and became Bonnie and Clyde. I thought that was good. I thought that was good. I suppose the question with Lula then is, what, you know, and ultimately, like, given the plot twist later on, it seems more that Lula seduced Dupre than the other way around when they first got together.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, whereas you would think potentially it was the flip side, that she was in his thrall, and in reality it was the other way around, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's quite a common conception, I suppose, that people would think, you know, male prison guard would force himself. It sounds a bit rapey, but, you know, it's,
yeah.
But, you know, but he would be the one to do all the, you know, the seducing and all that. That's kind of the accepted story for a lot of these kind of things. But it's an interesting turn, especially, you know, early to mid 90s, for her to be the one that clearly done all the work.
It isn't a bad twist, really, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that more down the line. Obviously, you've got Jack now, and he's out, and there's the whole thing about going back to the tattoo. I don't understand why, because he sees the tattoo starting to appear on his arm. I don't understand how that would happen, because tattoos aren't linked to, as far as we're aware, tattoos aren't linked to the soul.
Well, I've got no idea what that tattoo has got to do with anything. I watched it a couple of days ago and then thought, okay, I don't quite get that. And then they mentioned something a little bit later on in the episode. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe it's to do with that. And I don't remember seeing the tattoo again afterwards. So I kind of went back and thought, I need to keep an eye on this tattoo, just see if it has anything to do with stuff that's said later on in the episode. No, it doesn't.
Well, as far as I'm aware, the only point of it is to underscore the fact that we saw that Dupre had that tattoo when he was alive, and then we see that it's on Jack, as if to say, Jack's Dupre. But we kind of, well, we know that.
Yeah.
It's not telling us anything we don't already know.
This is like a really crap name tag.
Yeah. Yeah. In case you weren't sure why he's acting weirdly, in case you didn't know the episode title and you weren't sure of the... He's Dupre, okay? We get it, all right? Don't worry. So it just felt a little bit more like trying to telegraph for the dumb people, really. But I don't understand how that could happen. I mean, obviously, you know, The X-Files is a supernatural show at heart, and, you know, but even normally when the supernatural things happen, there is a context to them. I don't understand how a soul would switch a tattoo. That's the bit I don't get. No. And I can't quite reconcile that. But I suppose you've got to really go with it. It's one of those episodes, you've just got to go with it if you want to enjoy it, haven't you?
Yeah, you've just got to kind of let it do its thing and not question the stupid bits too much.
I did like how when Mulder's explaining, when he's starting to piece it together and he's starting to realise that Jack hasn't come back as Jack, when he's talking about soul transference and he's putting his theory out there, I think Scully's reaction was good. Because she's giving him an explanation. Well, it could be this, it could be that. And then when he says, well, you know, so she goes, what? Yeah. She does a proper little hang on. As if to say, really?
This is your answer.
Yeah.
Just no.
I thought that was good. Because she's coming out with things. And I can't remember what it is she suggests. It's things to do with, like, stress and workload and things like that. And then he comes out and goes, maybe Dupre's soul was switched at the exact time of death. And she's like, what? And, yeah, that's part of the fun of this show, in that it doesn't matter how much you can bludgeon Scully over the head with the bloody obvious, she will stick to her guns with stuff. And then we get then a scene where the X-Files is quite fun, certainly in the early days, of pulling in a random scientist to explain concepts in more detail. And it did it memorably in The Jersey Devil, which was a rubbish episode, and it has a really sort of hipsterish kind of professor who has a silly ponytail who comes in and explains, you know, anthropology.
Yeah.
In this case, it's a jolly old fat professor. Dr. Varnes, who made me laugh. I thought he was quite comically morbid.
Yeah, and his harebrained story about the pilot.
Yeah. That was hilarious.
And I think, because even I am at that point going, you what, mate?
Yeah. It was like, because he's talking about how, you know, the release of energy can change someone's personality and all this. And you're going, blimey, you make Mulder look like a normal guy.
it was funny. It was, as he's going on, you look. And I felt like a confused dog, because I'm looking at the TV, like, head askew, going, what?
I think the thing is, though, I mean, the X-Files does this in that it does try and cheat a little bit sometimes. When Mulder is in a point where he knows a certain amount, but because at the end of the day he's an investigator, he doesn't know everything about everything, so they have to pull in somebody quite often, especially, like I say, in the early days, they pull in people like this guy to give these pieces of exposition to sort of catch us up and go, right, well, this is the context, this is the supernatural context of it all, this is how it informs the plot. And I think it is a bit of a cheat. It is a bit crafty. But I think what the good thing about this episode, one of the things I did like, is that all a lot of the little incidental characters do have certain elements of personality. Like, this guy's a little bit comic and fat, jolly, comic, morbid guy. And then you've got the detective, the bald detective, who I thought he was quite funny. He was quite dry. And he was, Agent Bruskin, I think his name was. He was
this long in the tooth, cynical old detective.
Yeah. And I think they do that fairly well. They try and inflect people with little bits of personality, which I think is good. And in terms of, obviously, character development, this is the point where Scully admits that she used to date Jack Willis and that he was her academy instructor. I think this is interesting because this says a lot about Scully straight away. This kind of is one of the first instances where we see that she's attracted to older men who are in positions of authority who are quite intense.
Yeah. Dating the teacher.
Yeah, she's a bit kinky like that, isn't she? She's a bit like naughty, Scully. It's like, you shouldn't be doing, you know, especially in this day and age, that doesn't sit very well, really. Thankfully, she was, you know, she was old enough that it wasn't dodgy. But because there's an episode much later in the show, I think it's All Things, that Gillian Anderson wrote and directed, where a big part of that story is about a former professor who she used to date as well, who's dying. So this isn't necessarily the first time that she's done this. And it of course factors into why she ultimately becomes attracted to Mulder and you know, because he's intense.
Yeah.
Like Jack was. But do you really think that in what we do see of them, and then to be fair, they don't get a massive amount of screen time together, but do you really get the feeling that they pulled off that kind of connection between them?
No. No. It depends on, because you don't hear about how they broke up, if they broke up, but they do, you know, go out drinking, you know, on their birthday and that, but they just seem really awkward together in the bank.
Mm.
And I don't know. They certainly don't seem like they're that kind of friendly, or were that kind of friendly. I don't know. No, I don't. I certainly don't get the impression that they were ever that kind of a couple.
Maybe it's the actor, you know, involved. Maybe it's the certain lack of chemistry that they have, really.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. I think if anything, that in all things, there's a better pairing there. I mean, we're a long way off from that one, and it's not a very well known episode. But I remember it fairly well, and I think the dynamic she has with the guy in that is I believe that more than this one. But we'll get there one day. But yeah, it's this is now the point where we see that the guy who plays Jack, Christopher Allport, can do both sides of it. Although the only thing is that we don't really see him as Jack Willis for much, do we? He's just in it for like one scene, and he's just a fairly standard bloke. He's playing really a criminal more, isn't he?
I wonder if maybe that's the point. His role as the detective, as the FBI agent, is very bland. Maybe not the right word, but it's kind of run of the mill, isn't it? He's a very kind of stereotypical. He's just an FBI agent. You know, the fact they've given him a first and last name is the only thing really that differentiates him from all of the other random long brown jacketed people in the X-Files up until this point. There's nothing special about him or the fact that he's an agent. And when he becomes a criminal, that's when, you know, you get to see much more of him and get to see much more of the range of the man as well. He's much more interesting as a criminal.
But this was the whole thing of why it would have worked better as Mulder. Because, well, I was just thinking then that in Dreamland, it's not a soul swap. That's the thing. It's a body swap. So Mulder, yeah. David Duchovny is still playing Mulder. He's just seen as Maurice Fletcher by everybody else. In this, had Mulder swapped, David Duchovny would have been playing Dupre in Mulder's body. Now that's a very different thing. That would have allowed him to really, really go off the hook really, and be playing somebody who's a bit of a mean bastard, and ultimately a bit of a lovelorn guy as well, who gets suckered in by this woman. That would have been great to see, wouldn't it? And you would have had that whole thing that you know Mulder, you're seeing David Duchovny playing a completely different character, and even though the difficulties of getting resolving it, I think that would have been great. It would have been so much more interesting when he's going around killing people, you know, for betraying him and all this kind of stuff. I'd have been like, wow, this is great.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, now you say, you've told me that, you know, a lot of this was supposed to be Mulder outside of the ending. You know, like we said, the ending aside, there's no way you could have got that back properly. But the rest of the scenes, where it was clearly supposed to be Mulder, actually, they would have been really, really good scenes. They would have been really fun to watch, and probably much more powerful scenes as well.
They would have been. Although apparently, Howard Gordon ultimately did come to believe that the final decision to exclude Mulder from this, from the body swapping, was almost certainly for the best. And he saw the benefit of introducing Scully's former boyfriend, as it provided the opportunity to delve into a backstory. And he said, I think it was a wise decision. Now, in hindsight, we think there was some wisdom exercised there. But the only thing, I get that, but at the same time, I think, well, the whole stuff with Scully's boyfriend, they do it, it is there, but it is more, it's not really double-sided in that, you know, we don't really get to see her and Jack together. We get to see her trying to convince Jack to come back, when he's actually Dupre. So it's not really Scully and Jack we're getting to know. It's Scully and a criminal who looks like Jack.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I kind of think, well, that's not really telling us much about Scully and this guy, except the fact that they had a past and she cares about him. But we don't know enough about that to care. You know, it goes back to what we said before.
Yeah, well, listen, if it had been Mulder from the start, then yeah, or if maybe Jack had been in an episode, three or four episodes previous, where we'd had the explanation, and now he's come back for this episode and they've killed him off.
Right, exactly. That would have at least been a little bit more. If he'd have played a part in something else, yeah, and they could have done that. You know, they could have layered him in somewhere, having, you know, he could have cropped up in Beyond the Sea when Scully's going through all that stuff, when Mulder's in the coma. Maybe she goes to him and she says, look, I need someone to talk to. I don't know, just something like that.
Or he appears, you know, knowing that she needs somebody to talk to, and just kind of appears in the office one day, or, you know, at the hospital or whatever, you know, just appears there to give her a shoulder. We needed to see him before this episode for us to give even the slightest bit of a shit about it.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. We do get in this scene, though, where he kills Tommy, the Lula's brother, and we do get a unexpected celebrity spot here, which is Callum Keith Rennie. And I did a bit of a double tap. I was like, is that Callum Keith Rennie when he's younger? And I was like, yeah. You know, who later went on to play, quite memorably, he was in Californication, which was David Duchovny's later series, as a hard-drinking rock legend. But he's quite a good actor, Callum Keith Rennie. He's only crops up here briefly, and I think he appears in the movie, I want to believe, later on.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's in anything else in the show, if I remember rightly. But yeah, I did do a bit of it's Callum Keith Rennie, in a very small role. But actually he does crop up again. He's in Fresh Bones as a groundskeeper, which is random.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. So now obviously there's been another murder. This is where we meet Agent, what's his name? Agent Bald Guy. Can't remember his name. Agent Bruskin. Agent Bald Guy.
Agent Bald Guy works.
I think that works better, actually. This is where Jack reappears, but it's Dupre pretending to be Jack and trying to get back into the case. But like I said, this isn't Jack. Is so he all gets a little bit like convoluted in that sense. I noticed that he seemed to know Mulder, didn't he? Like they shake hands and he's like, "Oh, Jack," like that.
Yeah, I can't quite tell if he knows Mulder or he just knows to pretend to know Mulder.
Do you reckon?
You know, well, because the thing is, Mulder talks to him first and says, "You know, good to see you back up on your feet," or whatever it is he says. So I don't know if he knows Mulder or if he just knows by that response from Mulder that he needs to act like he knows him.
Mate, could it be another test from Mulder? Because obviously straight after he basically goes to, pretty much soon after he goes to Jack with the birthday card for Scully, and he tricks him into signing it, knowing that they've got the same birthday and it's a different handwriting. Yeah. Do you think that was a little test that Mulder was giving him, like, oh, well, you know, you don't really know me, but I'm going to make...
It possibly could have been, but he didn't bring it up later on, did he?
No, he didn't, no.
He brought up the card. That whole scene is... I don't think it's deliberately awkward. If it was deliberately awkward, it would have been really well done.
Yeah.
Because obviously it would be if you don't know any of these people, yet they all know you and you have to pretend to know them. But it just seemed kind of accidentally awkward as actually quite a rubbish scene to watch.
Yeah.
It was a half-decent scene, and I think he'd done all right with the fact that he's had to walk into this room full of people that know who he is. But it didn't quite sell it to me.
No, I just think it was a bit of an uncertain plot in there. But I think, like I say, I like Mulder's trick. And I also like how it's not quite enough to convince Scully. Because I think that, you know, getting someone to fake it, getting someone to do that signature is one thing. And, you know, she turns around and says, well, you know, he's stressed. He might well have... I forgot my birthday once when I was stressed. And I was like, well, I'm not sure you'd forget your own birthday. But at the same time, people do forget dates. And I just think going from that to immediately believing in soul transference is a bit of a leap. So I was with Scully in the scepticism there a little bit. I was like, well, okay. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, no, I kind of let her have that one as well. Because you can, you know, you can forget. Yeah, you know, stress can do some insane things to you. You know, like you say, maybe not forget my birthday. I might forget that it was my birthday, or just not realise that it was my birthday.
Mm.
But yeah, it is a big leap to go from, oh yeah, clearly there's something wrong, to clearly he's a dead guy.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's just a little bit like, it would be a bit of a leap. But when she questions Jack, though, about the print, I think she starts to get the first inkling that Mulder might be right. There's just something there in the way he is and the way she reacts to him, I think, where she starts to go, maybe something's not quite right here.
There's where I kind of mean, like, previously with the kind of really awkward walking into the room and knowing people. At this point, it's been put into the show deliberately how he is, and he's not awkward, he's just very cold, and he wouldn't be that with someone that he used to date and clearly 2 days ago was quite friendly with.
Yeah. And like we've said, if we knew Jack beforehand, it would have been even better.
Yeah. Well, we'd get to see him be the different guy as well.
Exactly, which we haven't really been able to see. So this is the point where now they're looking for Lula anyway. They're on the hunt for Lula, and they pursue her through this building. And I do like Mark Snow's music during this episode. It's very key in this. It's very sort of dark and brooding and, you know, bombastic. And I thought it was great. It really added a sense of, like, dark atmosphere to everything. I don't think he uses this music again, actually. I don't remember it in subsequent episodes, but it's really good. And it really, even though it's a fairly middling pursuit, I was like, well, that adds something to it.
Yeah, the pursuit's actually quite good. And the lighting downstairs as well is quite
That's
eerie.
True.
Which I didn't, I have to admit, I didn't expect, because at this point it wasn't a spooky episode at all.
No.
You know, it was a standard paint, but it was barely a Monster of the Week episode, was it? It was more like a CSI episode than
it was more of a thriller, wasn't it, really, in many respects.
So once you get downstairs and you've got that really kind of nice bright red lighting to kind of set the atmosphere for downstairs, I really liked it, actually, as much as it didn't quite fit the rest of the episode, you know, it still added a little bit of tension to the next couple of minutes.
Which is basically where Scully realises Mulder was right, you know, and this is the thing, it pretty much has to hit her in the face for her to realise that Mulder was right when Jack coughs her instead of Lula, and she is the one who gets taken in by him. I do like the fact that Scully just doesn't buy this, and that because of her connection to Jack and because it's a big leap, you know, because it's, if you think about it, it's one of the weirder X-File things that they encounter this in a way. You know, the idea of a soul switching between two potentially dead bodies is really, really, really weird. And the episode doesn't play it for too much weirdness. Like we said, it's much more of a crime thriller, really.
Yeah.
But it is a weird idea, and it is something that you really would find hard to prove at all. And this is why it's a shame it gets a bit on the nose with things like the tattoos, like we mentioned, because, you know, that wouldn't happen. Even if this did happen, I don't think that would happen. And so it's very hard for it's as hard to prove as it would be hard for Scully to actually deny it, because it's so strange that when she's faced with the fact that this may not be Jack after all, how can she possibly explain that one? This is the thing.
Yeah, true. Although she still doesn't quite believe it when it happens again in Dreamland, does she?
No, and you'd think, if I were Mulder, I'd have gone, do you remember that thing? Do you remember Jack Willis? You know,
we've been here before.
Yeah. And that was weirder. But yeah, this is where we get now some scenes between DeBray and Lula, but obviously as Jack. We see Lula not quite believing that it's him, and some hesitation. I really got quite a grimy vibe between these two as well. I like that. It was very sort of, you know, when they're talking about the blood, they cut each other's hands and they let the blood drip into the ocean.
Yeah, that was very Natural Born Killers, wasn't
it? Yeah, very. It was just a bit all a bit dirty and grimy and like a sinister love kind of thing.
Yeah.
I suppose. But I think, you know, I think even though Lula is obviously playing a long game here, I think her hesitation as well makes sense, because you wouldn't immediately believe this, would you? Really?
No.
And in this case, it's that she's once she believes it, she's like, oh, shit.
Yeah,
you know,
kind of has that look on her face that, oh, now I'm fucked.
But I thought I got rid of him. The other thing is, I like is before Mulder really realizes that, you know, this has all happened with Scully, there's a point where he's starting to doubt himself when he's talking to Bruskin, and I like that, because it's not very often that Mulder starts to go, hang on, am I barking up the wrong tree here?
Yeah, it was kind of, it was like this moment, wasn't it, where he was like, I've come up with this harebrained idea, but not only does nobody believe me, but I can't really prove it anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, all of my theories, you know, Scully's kind of crapped all over and explained properly with, you know, real world stuff. Yeah, he kind of had that moment where he's like, well, I'm not sure anymore.
Yeah. Because, as I say, it's really difficult to prove and disprove, really, in a way. It's one of those. So, because there's no essential tangible evidence, in a way. It's more just the actions of somebody. In this case, you know, Jack. So I thought that was interesting. And then when Jack does call, and then, you know, he's got Scully, you get him, Mulder, say Dana. And that was something that they only really did early on. Or they did by very specific choice later in the show, when he was worried, he was concerned he'd say Dana. He says it in Beyond the Sea, and then he says it here. And it's a bit like, I did a bit of a grimace. I was like, you still would call her Scully.
Yeah, it doesn't feel quite right, does it?
No.
It doesn't feel like them. Even later on when he calls her, it doesn't feel like them. It's always Mulder and Scully. I have the same reaction for about half the times where she calls him Fox.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there ain't that many times she does it.
No, very, very seldom.
But half the time she does, you're like, oh, no. Mm. No, don't do that.
Yeah. And, she doesn't very often after when she did it and Mulder says, I even made my parents call me Mulder. Like, that great line, as if to say, just don't. But, yeah, it doesn't quite fit. But we here now get, this episode does fall into the trap of Scully being the victim, which does happen quite a lot in season one, especially, and she's kidnapped again and they've got to find a way to save her again. But it does at least have the extra component of the fact that she's trying to convince Jack that, he's not Dupre. And I thought this was interesting because you see Jack starting to question everything and he sees the flashes of the snowstorm that she mentions when they had their trip away.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, well, this is interesting because they haven't quite clearly defined the rules of what happens when souls swap. But it suggests that Jack he's still there. And that if anything, it's like his soul has been copied and pasted by Dupre's. And I thought that was interesting because on the face of it, you'd think that a swap would imply that Jack died in Dupre. But there's obviously something still there of Jack.
Yeah, so I think they kind of brought it up previously with the scientist that explains about the pilot. Because the pilot story is very much the pilot was alive but started having flashbacks of things that he doesn't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're right. There are no clear rules anywhere set for this, which, I mean, it's okay because it's soul swapping. I don't think there are supposed to be rules.
It's true.
But at the same time, it'd be nice if it was explained properly.
Yeah.
And here, it isn't quiet.
No, there was a bit more consistency because it's not clear as to whether or not Jack's soul is still there or that his brain retains some kind of memory. I don't know. Yeah. But I don't think they know either. I think there's a big uncertainty really about it. But I thought the one thing that I wasn't sure about here was the way. I mean, I'm not sure about the Lula twist because I think that maybe it just throws an extra, dynamic into it that just makes it a little bit more soap opera-y in a way. But also, I think the whole thing about Jack suddenly being diabetic is a very convenient way of actually allowing Mulder to put the pieces together to find them. And I think that on the one hand, I liked it because it does show that Jack, the body of Jack, is different to the person inside. So Dupre has to face the consequences of Jack's body.
Yeah,
I thought that was good. But at the same time, it does feel a little bit convenient that, he has to go and raid an insulin to get some insulin, which we don't see. But, the FBI notice. That's handy. So they managed to... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it also works... again, I think it's very convenient, but I think it's also there to make it so that they can end the story without the FBI having to kill Jack.
Yeah, exactly. That's another thing.
And it is very, very convenient. But again, we're back to the same thing, aren't we, had earlier on. That's the only way, really, you could do it nicely. And again, there's no way you could do it with Mulder as the soul-swapped body, because we can't get 14, 15 episodes in and not find out he's diabetic.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's true. Yeah, exactly. It makes you wonder how they would have done it with Mulder, actually, as body swapped. That's interesting. I think it would have been a very different... there's nothing to say that the Lula twist would have happened the way it did either. It might have been a very different kind of story, actually.
Did you kind of, when Lula admits that she's the one that done it, did you just see how ridiculous she looks in that stupid beret?
Yeah, what was that about?
I watched it going, why have you suddenly put that on, looking like Lady G.I. Joe?
Yeah.
I genuinely don't understand the point, or you just look fucking stupid.
Didn't like Faye Dunaway in Bonnie and Clyde wear something like that, though?
Yeah, I think she did.
Maybe that's what they were going for, possibly. I don't know.
Probably.
It did look daft.
I can see that now, yeah. It just looked so stupid. And it's a weird thing to pull you out of an episode, but you're watching and I go, wait, what?
Yeah.
Why?
It's a bit what was that about? You get the moment where they're on the hunt for Lula, and Mulder speaks to her, and there's a nice moment where he gets quite angry, and he's like, you hurt her, and I'm going to fucking do you. You know,
yeah.
I thought that was good, because you can tell that there's a couple of instances at this point where Mulder's like, you know, he says later on to the FBI team, he says, this is personal for me, so, you know, don't fuck it up, basically.
Yeah.
I thought that was good, because you've got those, as well as the Dana thing, you've got those little moments that where you see that he's affected, he's genuinely worried for Scully's safety and things like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, we're a bit too early in for him to be calling her Dana.
Yeah.
But, you know, almost at the end of season one, we're certainly not far enough away from them being friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, they've been through some shit together already. I think it's okay for them to be, you know, have platonic as it might be, some genuine affection for each other.
Mm.
You know, I think that's okay. I think, and him seeing him get angry about that is very cool.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Little bit of tough Mulder. That was really good.
Yeah.
Now we get the bit where after the phone call, Mulder uses some technology with a FBI guy to try and pin down the sound of the airplane going by. I like that. I thought that it was very not 90s technology that they used, but I liked the way that they managed to pin it all down and they find Lula and the others with basically a passing airplane. I liked that. I thought that was clever. It felt a bit earned.
I think at this point, because what's this? This was 93, 94?
Yeah, it'd be 93 when they filmed it, probably, wouldn't it?
Yeah, see, and I think right around the same time, and I really hate that I can pull this out of my ass, right around the same time, we would have had people, Tommy Lee Jones, finding Harrison Ford the exact same way in The Fugitive.
That's true. Yeah, that's true, actually. That's a great film.
It's really bad that I can do that. I've not seen The Fugitive in possibly 10 years.
But that shows how good it is.
So the fact that I can still remember that, actually, I think is a testament to the quality of that film.
Without doubt, yeah, definitely.
But I think it was a very common thing then. It was maybe there was a new bit of tech came out around that time that meant it was easier to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, a bit like CSI was. It's not anymore. It's not on TV anymore. But a bit like CSI used to be, like, new bit of tech. We're going to throw this into every episode and show you just how good it is and how many people we can catch with it. I think there might be an element of that to it.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I think you're right. What I liked as well off the back of this was how you get that brief moment where Agent Bald Guy, I still can't remember his name. I've said it about half a dozen times. Bruskin. You get those moments where Bruskin says Mulder's going to, he's got a theory, and then this dickhead of an agent goes, oh yeah, is it aliens or the, you know, Kennedy assassination? And it's like, and he goes, well, hang on a minute, he's all right, Mulder, lay off.
Yeah, there's a lovely little moment, actually, where it's like, piss off, mate.
Yeah, I like that. That was nice, because it's very rare you get someone to stick up for him, but this guy's worked with him a little bit. He's seen that he's, you know, he's put a theory together, he's trying to work it out, and he's like, well, fuck off, mate, what have you done? He's at least trying to solve this, you know. I like the guy already, but this was great.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I didn't really feel either way about him up until that point. When he does that, I'm going, oh yeah, actually, that's very cool.
You're all right. Yeah.
Good man.
Yeah, good man. So obviously they're on the hunt for them, and they track them down, and you get what I thought was the unintentionally funny moment of the black agent pretending to be a preacher.
That was, I didn't know whether to laugh or just be really horrified at what they'd done. He just looks, the look on his face when he looks in the door, he just looks really creepy.
Yeah, he does. But he was funny. He was like, can I interest you in the Bible or whatever? It's like, the thing is, if you're a criminal or an FBI agent, whatever, you would surely see through that. You would surely through the fact that this guy is blatantly not a preacher.
He was horrific.
It's terrible. It's like they got the guy who's least capable of acting, right, in the FBI to go, oh, you, like, dude, go and pretend to be a preacher. They'll never guess.
Just put a cross on your coat. No one will know the difference. It's all right. Oh, yeah, that was just was terrifying.
It was dodgy. It was really dodgy.
Find the weirdest looking guy we can. We'll make him black. And just go out and sell some religion and see if you can find the bad guy. Awful. Awful.
I think, though, you know, obviously this all wraps up to the point where they kind of trick Lula, Jack and Scully. You know, she's very much become the pantomime villain at this stage as well, hasn't she, really? She might as well be cackling all the way through the episode now.
Well, it's like you mentioned earlier, she's basically become a soap opera bad guy,
yeah,
hasn't she?
You know, before she was a criminal who was seemed like a bit of a nasty bitch, but now she's just become somebody who, she's just a soap opera villain, and it's just all a bit daft. I think it was good though, in that you think that he's died, And then you get the almost like the tragic ending to their Bonnie and Clyde story, their natural born killer story, where he kills her. But I think that makes dramatic sense, really. When I thought he died, I thought that's a bit shit. You know, he's just dead. He's just died of the insulin problem. You know, and so I was quite pleased that then it turns out he grabs the gun and, you know, although it does mean that you don't get any kind of FBI raid, all that build up, and they come in and go, oh, all sorted? Good.
Just a massive just clean-up team.
Yeah. What did you think of the ending? Do you think it was a bit rushed or a bit...
I think it felt very quick. It felt a bit... Yeah, rushed is probably the best way to put it. But again, like I say, I think it's they just didn't know how to end it.
Mm.
You know, you can't have these people rushing, and whether or not he's actually Dupree, you can't have these people rushing and kill an FBI agent.
Yeah,
you know, it would have been a very, very wrong ending for that kind of episode. Mm. So I think they probably ended it the best way they could and just let him go off naturally, for want of a better word.
Yeah,
I like that he killed her off though.
Yeah, that was good. That's like his revenge. Not that it makes him sympathetic. You know, he's still a bastard.
Oh yeah, he's still 100% douchebag.
Yeah, but absolutely.
At least he gets his little bit of revenge for her being a slightly bigger douchebag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if you wanted to interpret it in a certain way, you could suggest that maybe there was a flicker of Jack still in there trying to help Scully.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's definitely been hinted at and suggested. But it's, you know, and then you get, you know, the final moment where Scully, you know, Mulder tells Scully about the watch times being the same. And he says it means whatever you want it to mean. I like that because that underscores everything. That says, well, we don't know. You know, you interpret what happened however you want to interpret it. You interpret whether it was all Jack was gone or he was still in there. You know, he's gone now, obviously, but...
There's a nice little moment, actually. There are a few of those across the whole series where Mulder, you know, he knows what the... You know, he knows what's happened, whether it be, you know, aliens or soul swapping or whatever. He knows what it is, but because it's personally affected someone, him, Scully, whatever, he backs off, and it's nice that the times when he backs off and goes, it's, you know, I think what I think. You can have whatever interpretation of it you want. At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And it's quite nice when he has those moments, especially when they're with Scully.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. And this was quite a good one. So that's Lazarus, an episode which wasn't as bad as I remember. Not perfect, very much kind of just barrels along and you've just got to go with it if you want to make any sense out of it. But I quite enjoyed it, and I found myself, you know, more in interested in it and entertained by it, even if I think that they missed a massive better story.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they definitely could have had the Mulder thing would have made it better for most of that episode.
I think. It would have been difficult to end, as we've said a few times, but yeah, I think it would have been more dramatically powerful and memorable, really. But yeah, not a bad one. Mid-tier, really. All right, moving on to our next segment, which is the Do You Believe In piece, where I ask my guest about the specific paranormality in the episode. So, Andrew, do you believe in near-death experiences?
Yeah, I think so. I've never had one myself. But,
good.
You know,
good.
I think I can. You know, the amount I've read, and the amount of people that have said the same thing, I don't think you can straight away say that it's all bullshit. I think I probably do, yeah. For no other reason than lots of people seem to have had the very same experience.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think so.
Because obviously, you know, it's a very divisive kind of thing. You know, you've got a lot of people who've said they do, and it can be interpreted in various different ways, like the ending of Lazarus suggests, really. It's described as a personal experience associated with impending death, encompassing multiple possible sensations, including detachment from the body, feelings of levitation, total serenity, security, warmth, the experience of absolute dissolution, and the presence of a light. And obviously these are all positive things, really, in some respects. It's that whole feeling of you're on your way to a better place. And that goes back to the whole mythology we've built around religion and this idea that there is an afterlife and that there is somewhere our souls go when we die. And we don't die. We're not just in the ground You know, and it all, I suppose it all depends on what your definition of life is, really, doesn't it? Whether or not you think that this is all we have, or... which, much as I've got a quite a nice life, I bloody hope not. It'd well, be nice to think there'd be a bit more, because we don't get very long. If we live for, like, 3,000 years, I might be happy enough. I'd be like, fine, that's enough.
Yeah, after the first couple of thousand, I've just, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, what I'm saying is, I wish I was Highlander. You know, so because you know he had a long run, but even him, even Highlander, most of the time he seems knackered and fed up by it. It's like he's seen too much.
You strapped to that big lump of wood and sent on your way.
Well, yeah. By that time, you'd be like, oh, just fine. But I suppose it all comes down to what you believe. Do you think there's more? Do you think there's something beyond through that tunnel of light, or are you not sure?
I don't know. I hope so, but I have no strong belief either way, I don't think. I'm very agnostic in my beliefs.
Yeah, because this is it, I think, being... Because it does all come down to, in a way, religion, because if there is another place, the suggestion is that someone's there who created it and that, you know... But regardless of whether or not you're religious or not, this idea of there being something beyond, if you're an atheist... It's quite scary, really, isn't it, to think, well, no, it's just blackness forever.
I mean, I have to admit, I don't think it's black. I think something must happen. I wouldn't want to guess as to what, and I try not to spend too much time thinking about it.
Good. Good. Enjoy it while you're here, you know, is the best thing.
Well, that's it, you know, I've got family and things I want to spend my time with, not sit there and worry about what's going to happen.
Staring into the abyss.
Yeah.
I can't play now, love. I'm just staring into the abyss.
Yeah, I'll be with you in a little while. Just let me wallow for a bit.
Well, you know, I suppose we're all going to find out one day, aren't we? So let's just hope it's sooner rather than later, really. I'm hoping for 3,000 years. Maybe I'm being a bit optimistic, especially maybe. Given the shit I eat, in fairness.
Well, this is it. I don't really look after myself that much. 3,000 years is pushing it. I'm lucky, I think, to have gotten to 33 so far.
Yeah, tell me about it, yeah. Okay, well, that's possibly you might wish you were dead after doing the X quiz.
Right, so you would not believe the amount of notes I've taken for this poxy episode. I'm not holding my breath because I did this last time as well and still completely fucked it all up.
You're aiming now to beat Matt Latham, who currently holds the record. He's at 5 out of 6 for space. Now, unless that's been broken, I know, and he's gutted that he's got that higher score for such a shit episode as well. But
it's a pants episode too.
It's terrible.
I keep matching my own 3. Beating someone else's 5, I think is impossible.
Well, let's see. Are you ready for 5 questions and a quote on Lazarus?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay. All right, question 1. Name the bank the opening raid takes place in.
The Maryland Marine Bank.
Well done. You've clearly been noting down all the... all the little, like, in place names. Well done. We kind of talked about this, so you might get this. What was Dupre's profession before he fell for Lula?
He was a prison guard.
He was. Well done. 2 out of 6. Okay, what colour is the burning stove that Scully reminds Jack of from their trip to the woods?
Red brick.
Oh, yes! He's got... You might get this. You might get the 6. You might, you know, you're paying off right now.
I didn't even write that one down. How shit is that?
What does the FBI douchebag who speaks to Bruskin suggest Mulder will brief them on?
Is it alien abductions or a new theory on the Kennedy assassination?
Yes. Wow. 4. 4. You've already beaten your score. You're going for it. You might get it.
All right with that. If I get the other 2 wrong, it ain't that bad.
I think you're going to get the 6. I've got good vibes. Okay, question 5. How old was Jack when Scully gave him the engraved watch?
Oh, crap. 35?
Yes! You've got it. That's 5. Right, you are now equal with Matt Latham. Okay.
Fucking
this is it. If you get the quote, you have reached top score, which means you are Mulder in the scale of X-Files quizzing. Here we go. This is exciting. Okay, the quote. Here we go. Remember, character who says it, and ideally the scene. Don't worry, baby. It won't make any difference in the dark.
Oh, so it's Dupree as Willis explaining to Lula who he is in the house.
Yes! Woo! 6. You have reached maximum score for Lazarus. Your homework has paid off.
Thank Christ for that. I'll send you screenshots of the amount of notes that I took. They don't fit on one page of my iPad.
Which paid off. So well done. You have topped out. You are there to beat. But, well, to equal. Cause,
unless you increase the amount of questions.
Don't tempt me. No, well done. You've topped out. So, yeah, you're now king of the makeshift leaderboard. So, yeah, let's the challenge to anyone else who's coming on the show, guys. You now need to beat Brooker, or you need to equal Brooker and get a 6. Otherwise, he's king of the quizzes.
I've never been. So I wasn't this nervous at my wedding, dude.
Oh dear, this is what I do to people. Good stuff. Well done. Right, well, that's all for us. A exciting episode of Lazarus, and yeah, it's been a good one. So thanks a lot, Andrew, for coming on, and well done again for beating your score.
Thank you for having me on again. It's always a pleasure.
Awesome, brilliant. So where are you hanging about around on the internet? People can find you if they want to.
Where do I hang about? I mean, I do a lot of writing and podcasting for Fail Critics. Pretty much all of my responses to every film I ever watch goes in that kind of direction, or you can just follow me on Twitter. I'm at Brooker411, where my opinion on everything comes out, not just films.
Brilliant. Do check him out. It's great stuff. And yeah, it's always worth reading and listening to appearances and other stuff as well. So make sure you do that, guys. We're on Twitter, as ever, at @X_cast, and on Facebook at @TheXcast, and on iTunes. Please do subscribe. That'd be awesome. And you can find our show at www.blackholepodcasts.com as part of Black Hole Media, the podcast network. There's loads of other podcasts on there. So, yeah, do check us out and have a listen. That'd be great. So, yeah, we'll be back next time. Brooker, you're back again for the next episode for your sins. Can you beat 6? Can you equal your score?
I doubt I can equal the score. I watched my note-taking episode of the next one was kind of a bit hasty, so I didn't get quite as much written down for this one.
Oh, we'll see. Challenge is on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll be back for Young at Heart soon. So thanks for listening, and remember, guys, as always, trust no one.